The following is a recording of the Bill Thorne teleconference with the National Retail Federation on Tuesday, October 27th, 2021 at 9:30 a.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Bill Thorne. You may begin, sir.
Thank you very much, Amy, and thank you all for joining us today. Good morning and welcome from Washington, D.C., where we're enjoying a beautiful fall morning. I'd like to thank our speakers today, Matt Shea, the President and CEO of the National Retail Federation, and NRF Chief Economist Jack Kleinhans. So let's get things started. To kick things off, Matt, what can you tell us about expectations for holiday sales growth this holiday season?
Bill, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Nice to be with you and have you be part of this conversation with us. Listen, we all know it's been another historic year in terms of transformation and incredible growth in the retail industry. As we continue to work through both the changing behaviors of consumers, as well as the changes brought about by the pandemic and evolving external issues related to supply chain, workforce inflation, and others. Overall, 2021 has been a much better year than 2020 for many reasons. Certainly, there's been a lot more certainty about the way in which we handled the pandemic, and we've seen great progress on that front. And for retailers, they've benefited substantially from the incredible fiscal and monetary stimulus that's been provided by the federal government over the course of the last 20 months. That and other factors have created an environment in which overall, household fundamentals are very, very strong. Consumers are in an incredibly favorable position as we head into the last few months of the year. We see income wages continuing to rise, savings rates at all times high, and household balance sheets never stronger. And you know, you all are aware of this, but just as a validation of that in some context, retail sales have grown year over year for every month consistently since May of 2020, when we really began to emerge from the initial lockdowns that impacted so many large and small businesses at the very onset of the pandemic. So that momentum has continued. And what we've seen this year is that for the first 9 months of this year, January through September, on a year-over-year basis, retail sales have increased by 14.5%. And again, for some context, in 2020, retail sales increased for the entire year by almost 7%. And so we're 14.5% ahead of that, so on a two-year stack, at least for 9 months of the year, this year plus all of last year, we're above 20% growth, which is pretty remarkable that the retail industry has been able to manage through that, working with suppliers and partners, continuing to meet the needs of their consumers and serve those communities, and do it all against the backdrop of an unpredictable pandemic and keep millions of Americans safe and healthy and employed at the same time. What we've seen this year is that all categories of retail have performed extremely well. And, of course, those that were most challenged last year that initially fell the furthest have recovered as well. So there have been obvious categories that we all know performed very, very well. We've seen that momentum continue into other categories, including, of course, furniture and home furnishings, clothing and apparel, electronics, appliances, and others. So across the board, as we head into the holiday season, what we see across all indicators is very, very strong momentum. It's our belief that an expectation consumers are going to continue that energy throughout the rest of this year. There are a number of external factors that are playing a role here. We're all aware of issues like supply chain disruptions, labor shortages, those contributing, of course, to rising inflation, and then against the backdrop of the pandemic, response measures, vaccine rates, and other things related to the health environment. So it's not as if there are not some headwinds and challenges, and yet, in spite of that, we have a great deal of confidence that consumers will continue to power the economy in this last quarter of the year. Of course, we're in a $20 trillion economy. There have been trillions of dollars of monetary stimulus, fiscal stimulus. It's a good bet there will be more at some point. We don't know when or how much, but when we think about that stimulus, it certainly pumped up consumer demand, and in some ways the government policies that have increased demand have also impacted supply chain issues, creating labor shortages, business closures, and other things. So there's a confluence of factors here on top of the pandemic that are creating some challenges. Just as an aside, one of our key policy priorities is infrastructure investment. And we participated in a number of conversations with the White House and other senior administration officials on this over the last few months, most recently in the past several weeks. And it's our view that the pandemic didn't so much create these problems in our supply chain as simply illuminate and make more visible the kinds of underinvestment that has occurred in this country for many decades on a variety of infrastructure needs. And while there are some near-term fixes that we are trying to bring into place with the federal government and other stakeholders, and we're making some progress there, the real solution to this on a comprehensive basis is a long-term one, and it's going to require investment, and that's one of the reasons we've been so supportive of the bipartisan infrastructure bill that passed the Congress, both houses of Congress last summer, and which we think ought to be moved with expedition to the president's desk for signature. Retailers also have made great investments in perfecting and improving the digital experience for consumers. And I think in several areas we've seen both in fulfillment, such as buy online, pick up in store, curbside, and home delivery, same-day delivery, but in fulfillment, in areas related to payments, and, of course, in engagement, social media, and the use of other sorts of technologies to keep consumers engaged, have created an environment in which retailers are in a much healthier position this year than ever before to use all of the assets at their disposal, including digital, to deliver increased consumer expectations for the holiday season. And continuing to evolve and adapt to meet those changing expectations. I think all of that, I think, as you know, means that retailers have been planning more robustly than ever how to structure their seasonal inventory, their staffing, their product promotions, pricing for this holiday season. And back to the two-year stack, the 14.5% sales growth through this year over last year through 9 months and last year's growth, there may not be an exact correlation, but we know that imports have grown substantially in the U.S. And that this year, they expect our port tracker, our proprietary data that tracks the number of containers that come into ports, we're expecting 26 million 20-foot equivalent units, TEUs, 20-foot containers coming into the United States this year, which is a 20% increase over last year, which was itself an increase. So we're at an all-time high in terms of goods, which I think reflects that, and I know reflects from what I've heard from the CEOs, our board members, other senior executives at retail companies, that they have planned for this in advance. And in spite of some of the photos that we've seen and some of the hyperbolic statements made about supply chain challenges, which are real, in spite of that, we are prepared for the holiday season, do have and will have the inventory in place and be prepared to meet consumer needs such that we're going to fulfill this demand this year. One of the reasons for that is that not only have retailers evolved and adapted their behavior for the environment, but so have consumers. We know this year more than ever, consumers are embracing an earlier start to the holiday season. And for our part, we are certainly encouraging consumers to get out there and shop early and shop safe to make sure they've got the presents that they need and want for this holiday season so they can celebrate the way they'd like to. Our consumer research this year shows continued progression in the trend that holiday shoppers, consumers are starting earlier than ever and before November, and we think this year in particular that's going to continue to manifest itself. So there's an enormous amount of momentum as we head into the holiday season. This year provides a track record to demonstrate consumer strength, household balance sheets, income savings, wages. And so we feel very, very good that we are predicting the highest holiday retail sales this season on record. And we are forecasting that 2021 holiday retail sales will increase between 8.5% and 10.5% over 2020 sales, which would equate to between $843 billion and $859 billion of sales. So, and that is against the backdrop of holiday retail sales averaging about 4.5% over the past 5 years and growing just a little more than 8% last year, which was itself a record. So this is a very positive forecast. We think very reflective of the environment. We think very consistent with the other economic indicators that we've seen and certainly with what we're hearing from our members as we head into this last quarter of the year. As a reminder, just on the methodology, and in a minute we'll turn it over to our chief economist, my colleague Jack Kleinhans, but for purposes of this forecast, the NRF holiday season is measured as retail activity between November 1 and December 31, and we exclude sales at auto dealers, gas stations, restaurants, because we don't consider those to be core for purposes of our study. And you're all looking at others, and you understand we all have a slightly different methodology. And there are multiple factors that go into this forecast. Jack has done enormously successful work here for 20 years. We've got 24 factors that we look at that consider a whole range of data that impact households and employers and consumers. It's been very, very valid over time, so we feel very good about this. So we're looking forward to a strong season. We know consumers have the savings and the financial firepower to meet their desires and needs for the season. So we look forward to that conversation with you. And I will turn it over to my colleague Bill, our Senior VP of Communications, and look forward to the rest of this discussion. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate those insights. I'm going to turn it over now to our economist, Jack Kleinhans. He's going to give a little more context into the forecast and the overall expectations on the economy for the 2021 holiday season. Jack, you have been doing this for a while. Can you provide us some insights about the economy how you got to this forecast and what your expectations are.
Thanks, Bill and Matt. It's a pleasure to be part of this discussion today. Let me begin, first of all, and kind of tag on to what Matt just said, is that the data that we're looking at for November and December, we benchmark against with the U.S. Census data, the retail data that's released on a monthly basis. And a reminder that we also exclude autos, we exclude gasoline and restaurants. So what I'm going to do right now is kind of go over our forecast framework, go through some of the elements that are important as we've been discussing already this morning. And there are tailwinds and there are headwinds. And let's just start with the overall economy. We've experienced a little bit of a slowdown in the third quarter. We will get data tomorrow on GDP for the third quarter. Consumer spending has held up relatively well. There was a little softening, we believe, in July and August, but certainly we should have the benefit of September retail sales that will help that third leg of the third quarter. As we look at what happened during that third quarter, it was weighed down by COVID infections and hospitalizations, and, of course, as Matt was talking about, is supply bottlenecks. I'm looking ahead. I believe the economy is actually very sturdy and is standing on its own 2 feet, absent the amount of fiscal spending that we've had over the large part of 2021. The outlook for personal income is good. We've had good income fundamentals. Income rose in August. It was driven by wages and compensation. And we will get new readings on both income and outlays on Friday of this week, which will help us define a little bit better some of these components. But I expect to see gains in the labor market through the last 3 months of the year. And that should add income as well as spending. As Matt said, we have strong balance sheets supporting demand. The amount of added savings is significant. I estimate somewhere around $4.3 trillion. We've also seen where consumers have paid down debt. Their wealth has increased. And we've had the benefit of the stimulus for much of this year that's helped the net worth balance sheet. Now, important to what we have seen not only in the last couple of months, but throughout the year and throughout last year, certainly the number of COVID cases and hospitalizations, and without a dead concern for the deaths that have occurred. But right now, it looks like COVID cases have peaked in September, and they are receding. We've had the benefit of vaccinations. We have new authority for the use of boosters and shortly for child vaccines. This will all provide more mobility and improvement for consumers and households in terms of how they approach the holiday season in the coming months. Now, we've had remarkable sales, just as Matt had said. We saw a banner year with 14.5% growth for the first 9 months. And high-frequency data that gets released almost on a weekly basis is showing that individuals are returning to work. There's a pickup in foot traffic. We're seeing some spending in some of the service areas. So this is all strong indication for future employment gains and retail spending. Now, we might want to stop for a second and mention, as Matt had said, that consumers have already begun their shopping, and we've encouraged them. This could pull some of the sales out of November and December and into October. Nevertheless, you know, we'll be very pleased that consumers are happy during this season. Just a couple of more other elements that I'd like to go over with you is employment was less than expected in the month of September. Although let's look at the 3 month average, it's around 500,000 jobs, and initial claims are also down, as well as continuing claims. We recognize that the labor supply is a constraint. There remains a lack of available workers, and not a lack of jobs. So as we get into the holidays and into next year, I think we'll see improvement in the labor market. A couple of things that maybe don't get mentioned too frequently, but we should, is that households are not overly leveraged. And that's a large difference from where we were back prior to the Great Recession and even a little bit into the recession. They've been able to pay down credit because of the extra money they've had in their wallets from not being able to spend money on services, or the stimulus checks have also been a big help. And outstanding credit balances as a percentage of their disposable income. So that would be the ratio of total debt payments on a monthly basis to their disposable income actually is at 20-year low. Now, I've just provided some what I would call tailwinds, but there are headwinds. We certainly are concerned about inflation, and price increases have resulted in a mismatch between the supercharged demand by consumers and certainly outstripping inventories and current production. We all are aware of these, and it'll take a while to catch up, and it will continue to put pressure on prices. I think at this point that consumers are able to absorb these prices, and the price increases are not necessarily as much of an impediment to spending as they had been in the past. The big question will be, is when we look at the data, is the fall off of any spending due to a price hike or lack of merchandise to purchase? Now, just a couple of other, I think, headwinds that we should mention, and certainly concerns, shipping delays were part of the problem last year. Firms have geared up to try to avoid that this year. I think if retailers can keep merchandise on their shelves and it arrives at Christmas, this will be a stellar holiday season. But, of course, we have also to play with the higher energy prices this winter, winter storms earlier this year, and Hurricane Ida caused major infrastructure damage, power outages, and we're still running below capacity. Weather is sort of the last comment I'll make. I'm not very good at predicting the weather. I'm not going to really pass off any responsibility to weather forecasters, but on an important note is that the La Nina weather pattern that's being forecasted for the northern hemisphere this winter will certainly play into it. If you go back over past La Nina patterns, it usually correlates with stronger retail sales, and that could be a factor. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Bill.
Thank you very much, Jack. Very insightful. We're going to open it up for questions. So, Amy, could you please let folks know what they need to do in order to get into the queue?
Yes. Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Again, to ask a question, that is star 1. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions.
Now, while we're paused, Matt, I'd like for you, if you wouldn't mind, to give us some thoughts about the survey work that we do specific to consumers, their sentiments on issues like policy and the economy, and lately the reconciliation bill and rising inflation. But can you share some observations related to the trends that we're seeing?
Yep, Bill. Thanks, Jack. Thank you for your thoughts. We are out in the field weekly talking to thousands of consumers, as Bill said. So separate and apart from this economic forecast, we are also doing the attitudinal survey work of consumers that happens every week. And we do ask them a whole range of questions related to their behaviors, their confidence about the economy, their awareness of various policy issues right now. And, related specifically to some of the policy issues taking place now, Bill, for example, on reconciliation, we know that more than 72% of consumers are concerned that if passed, the $3.5 billion reconciliation bill could lead to higher prices. And they are already aware of higher prices, and 77% say they're concerned about inflation. Now, we have to take some of that with a grain of salt because we know that sometimes their attitudes and their actions are moving in two different directions. So I think we've seen that they're pretty sophisticated. They can have an attitude about something and continue to behave in a way that may not be completely consistent with that. So I think the important takeaway here is that the consumers that we're talking to are paying attention, that they have a perspective and a point of view, and that at some point, you know, some of these things will impact consumer behavior. For the moment, for all the reasons Jack just said, we believe consumers are behaving very, very aggressively and driving the economy, and we think that sets us up for a very strong, robust holiday season.
Yeah, we just launched a six-figure ad buy related to the reconciliation bill, and I think people, what we found was in the survey work that we've done, they're a little bit confused about exactly what that is. What they're not confused about is the cost of the price. And so I think that the more they learn, the more concerned they become. So with that, Amy, let's take the first question, please.
Anne. Our first question comes from Anne DiNizio with the Associated Press.
Hi, thank you for having this call. I had two questions, actually. The first is, you know, can you talk a little more about the inflationary pressures? Because, you know, I'm seeing studies that people are going to spend less for discretionary items, you know, for holiday because they're spending more, you know, at food stores. Can you tell me a little more about, like, how, just what kind of pressure, more details about what kind of pressure stores are facing, particularly for low-income shoppers, and what that means. Thanks.
And it's Jack Finance. Certainly, these pressures are critical. You know, the underpinning of prices are both shortage in production, but also the cost of transportation, fuel, also that are basis for. Some of the costs that that grocers and merchandisers are seeing, and don't forget also the food prices also reflect sort of the agricultural cycle that has occurred. There has been some droughts, and that has impeded production on certain foodstuffs. And of course, you know, it takes a while for the protein production to get back into cycle, hogs, cattle, chickens, et cetera. So we have such demand right now, and demand is really outpacing the ability to keep up inventories and also production. So I think it's going to continue. I think as we get into the remainder of this year, it stays high, but I'm looking at maybe early part of 2022 and 22 that we'll see some receding in prices.
Okay, and then I just have a follow-up question. Experiences, you know, last year really people weren't, you know, we weren't traveling, we weren't really going out to spas, and that helped, you know, this you know, retailers who sold stuff. So can you talk about maybe now that people are going back into traveling, obviously it's not rebounded fully, but people are going back to the spas, travel, how that could eat into the holiday spending of stuff, you know, and what kind of pressure that could put on retailers. Thank you.
Hey, Ian, it's Matt. So I think that was always the question last year, and to a certain extent continues to be the question as consumers transition back into a more active life of experiences that would drive the service portion of our economy, and would that have the potential to detract from or subtract from the actual goods portion of our economy that is core retail? And, you know, thus far, We haven't seen it. In fact, I think many retailers have found ways to take advantage of consumers moving back into a more experience-oriented economy. We're clearly not all the way there yet, as travel and hospitality and lodging and dining sectors continue to stay depressed relative to core retail. And yet many consumers, when they do participate in the service side of the economy and the experience side of the economy, there's a correlation between that and retail, so that you bundle those activities in a way that whether you're going to a family event, a holiday event, a sporting or an entertainment event, there's a retail portion of that event. And so our view is there's going to be a way to benefit from the return to more active lifestyles on the experience side of the economy. And we're also very encouraged that beginning in early November, international travelers who are fully vaccinated will be able to visit the United States. We think that's also going to give a jolt to the retail side, because there is a high correlation between international travelers and tourism in the U.S. and retail sales. So it's our view that the return to the service and the experience economy is going to be positive and beneficial for retail, and it's going to be enhanced furthermore by these international visitors returning to the U.S.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ann.
Thanks, Ann. Thank you, Matt. Amy, next.
And our next question comes from Anna Teller with the Wall Street Journal.
Hi.
Anna, your line is live. If you've muted your line, Anna, please unmute at this time.
Anna, there?
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yep, we got you.
There you are.
Hi, this is actually Sarah. I don't know who Anna is. this is Sarah, not Sarah from the journal.
We were wondering the same thing.
I was like, who's logged on in the journal? I just wanted to follow up. Matt, you talked about, the sort of where consumers' heads are at a little bit in terms of getting the products that they want for the holidays. And you said, there's been some sort of hyperbolic buzz about supply. Retailers are ready for the holidays. But also, please, yes, shoppers should buy early if they want. They want to make sure they get what they want. Can you just unpack that a little bit? I kind of heard two opposite things.
Sure. I think that you ask a good question, and I think what we have seen historically, and particularly at the holiday season, is that consumers, and this is obviously pre-pandemic, and there's an even greater premium on this now than ever, consumers know when the holidays are going to happen, and they, and sometimes in spite of what they say or what's going on externally, they're prepared, and they adjust their behavior accordingly for whatever external environment they might face. So I think in this case, what we think that means is that the retailers have accumulated the inventory that they need to meet consumer expectations. Nevertheless, there may be some categories in which there will be some shortages, or which consumers will need to do some switching or trading from one particular item to another. And because consumers are motivated to engage in the holiday season this year, and they have the financial ability to do so, that we think they'll still participate in the holiday season, even if they need to switch to another item or trade among different goods, because their first choice may not be available. We think the assortment is going to be there at the right price, and that consumers will not be deterred from participating, so that they are going to affirmatively be out shopping for the holiday season, and they won't go home empty-handed. They will, one way or the other, they will shop, they will purchase, and they will find an item. Hopefully, many of them who've started early and have a game plan are going to get exactly what they want. Others, you know, will get something. Whether it's exactly what they want or not, I think depends on their preference and also that particular item and when they start shopping. So we don't think that these are necessarily mutually exclusive, both that retailers have brought in plenty of inventory and that we're still seeing some delays, because we think consumers are sufficiently motivated that they will participate in the holiday shopping transactions, and that will translate into this robust sales that we expect.
Okay. And just in terms of, you know, you're talking about consumers' willingness to switch and maybe, you know, try something else. All right. What evidence do you see of their willingness to do that, like getting a little wonky on it? How do you know consumers are willing to do that?
Well, we certainly saw it early in the pandemic when there were stockouts and shortages on some basic household commodities. So we couldn't find the things we needed in terms of initially it was cleaning supplies and other kinds of products that you had around the house. But as last spring unspooled and we realized we were going to be spending even more time at home, working from home, going to school from home, entertaining at home, dining at home, we know that substantial numbers of consumers tried brands for the first time. We know from talking to retailers and many public reports that many retailers identified and engaged and have retained new customers. So we know that consumers have become more comfortable trying new brands, new experiences, shopping in new ways, using digital experiences differently. And I think just as we saw a decade ago after the last recession, consumer behavior fundamentally and I think permanently changed in many ways. Sensitivity to pricing, willingness to pay a full price for things. We got much more promotional after the last recession of necessity because it was a different kind of a recession. No one had anything to spend. We had lots of goods and no money. And in this experience, we've got plenty of money, but in a few categories, not as many goods. And so that's driven consumers to adapt in a different way, and that is now they're willing to try new brands and different experiences because they've got the financial ability to spend, and they will. They're not going to look for something and say they can't find the one thing they want and then just go home and put it back in their savings account. They're actually spending it. And for the reasons we discussed a minute ago, they can't spend it in the same way that they would like to or they did historically on the experience side yet for a variety of reasons. So it's still going to flow into goods. And in that regard, I think retail still benefits to a bit of an extent from the absence of really robust engagement on lodging, hospitality, dining, entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much. Amy, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Nathaniel Meyerson with CNN.
Hi, guys. So I know that, you know, you guys are saying that kind of retailers are, you know, bringing in inventory early and, you know, in some cases chartering their own ships. Do you think that this holiday season is going to be more difficult for small businesses and for independent stores that don't have, you know, the resources to navigate these supply chain issues? Can we talk a little bit about the differences, you know, in large, you know, the large companies and the small players?
Well, Nathaniel, thanks. It's Matt Shea. I guess, you know, the experience post-pandemic, going back to last spring of 2020, is that independent and smaller retailers don't have the same resources that some of their larger competitors do, and yet they found a way to operate in many cases successfully and to compete for and attract consumers by distinguishing themselves in the marketplace through a variety of means related to their involvement in the local community or offering unique products or giving additional kinds of services or meeting customers in a way that other retailers just cannot. And so it is true that they don't have the same resources. And I think, you know, for smaller retailers, particularly in major urban areas, the larger challenge has been the lack of a robust return to office activities, because many of the smaller retailers out in suburban areas continue to do well for all of the reasons Jack's already discussed, that consumers are in a very healthy position financially. So they're going to the local furniture store, or they're going to the local electronics store, or they're going to the local gift shop. But the retailers, the small and independents that have really been dramatically hurt, have been those that are closely associated with downtown areas of major metropolitan cities that have not opened partially or fully because they don't have the foot traffic that they need. So the small retailers that we speak to, who the independents that sit on our board, who participate in our Small Business Retail Council, who were part of our conversation last week with a half dozen members of Congress to talk about the retail industry, many of them are finding ways to compete successfully. Nevertheless, there will be some that, for a variety of reasons, either related to the macro environment in some of these urban areas or because they don't have the relationships with suppliers, will find challenges. And, you know, we have historically participated in and supported Small Business Saturday. We'll certainly do that again with our partners. And that's always an opportunity to celebrate you know, that element of the retail industry, which is critically important to our overall economy.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you, Nathan. Next question, Amy.
And our next question comes from Amelia Pollard with Bloomberg News.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Jack. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Hi, so thanks so much for taking the time today. My question pertains to, you know, the fact that obviously we've heard from analysts and retailers alike that shoppers need to start early. Consumers need to, you know, kind of start buying for the holiday season ahead of Thanksgiving as opposed to afterwards. I'm just curious, have you seen consumers heeding this advice so far? It might be a little too early to tell, but do you have any read on whether or not consumers are, you know, truly shopping early, or what is your take on this?
Yeah, I guess our view is both through our surveys of consumers through Prosper, our partners that were out, I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're out every week in the field talking to thousands of consumers, that consumers are out again this year, that number is up and has increased from years past. So we've certainly seen over the last several years, we've seen people starting earlier and earlier and earlier. We know it happened last year in a big way because of the pandemic. And we know that this year that's even a larger number. So nearly half of those consumers who are going to be out shopping this holiday season have already begun that shopping, and it's not even Halloween yet. So that goes back to the observation a few minutes ago. Consumers will participate in this holiday season, and they're adapting their behaviors to meet the changed environment that they're finding with regard both to the pandemic and to the other external activities that are impacting the availability of the things that they want.
Is that all right?
Great. Thank you so much. And this is Matt, right?
That was Matt.
Yep. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for being on the call.
Danielle, I think we're a little bit past time, but let's go with one more if we may.
And our next question comes from Logan Moore with Barron's.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you guys for fielding the question. So I want to ask specifically about department stores, places like Macy's, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Gap. I mean, obviously these are included in the research, but I mean, moving forward, especially this holiday season, are you still expecting strong growth in those areas? I think, you know, stores like this are specifically under additional pressure, especially when you look at competitors who might be separating their e-commerce arms completely. And I guess further, will consumers want to continue to shop in person and experience that despite, you know, the growth that we're seeing, continuing to see in e-commerce?
Well, this is Matt Shea. I guess the first observation is that relative to the first 9 months of this year, retail sales increasing 14.5%. That's up both in store and online. So consumers are actually back in stores. There is foot traffic, and they're participating. And I think the other observation is we're in a much healthier environment. We've talked a lot about consumers, but retailers are much healthier than a decade ago as well. So if we go back to 2010 and 11, there were approximately 400 bankruptcies in the retail industry each of those 2 years. In the past 20 months, there have been, you know, 75, and the overwhelming majority of those have been reorganizations. So retailers are healthier, stronger, meeting the needs of the and expectations of consumers. Department stores were, we believe, unfairly impacted at the beginning of the pandemic because they and others were sort of arbitrarily forced to close their businesses when there's nothing inherently unsafe about shopping for a sweater relative to shopping for a loaf of bread. And we've seen department stores and apparel and discretionary retailers really bounce back since the economy's reopened. So the department stores are always a popular destination for the holiday season based on the consumer survey work we do. They continue to be at the top of the list of the places people shop this year, and we have every reason to expect that that's going to continue.
Matt, this is Jack. I just wanted to quote a couple numbers. We've seen some really strong growth in the summer months for department stores. On a year-over-year basis, department store growth is 24%, 25%. We're the same month in August a year ago, and September was also very strong. And if you look at it on a two-year growth rate, we were around 15% or so in August, and then it bumped up to September to another 20% on a two-year growth, which would be 2021 versus 2019. So I think department stores are coming along pretty well.
Good. Yeah, thank you for clarifying those misconceptions. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all, and that's going to wind us up for today. If you have any questions about the forecast, you can contact our media shop at press@nrf.com or call 855-NRF-PRESS. Amy, thank you for your help today.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. You may now disconnect.